Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
My guest is Lawrence Leamer. He is the author of the brand new book, Capote's Women, A True Story of Love, Betrayal, and a Swan Song for an Era. The book is available everywhere. I know that Lawrence has written all kinds of books about various topics, and they've all been so good. And Lawrence, this particular subject of the women who surrounded themselves around Capote, was this an offshoot of your previous books about the Kennedys? Because it seems like it would be a natural progression for this type of an era, this type of book.
Not really, Brian, but I got a little connection there. If people know my last name, it's because my great uncle was a lawyer in South Sioux City, and a lot of my relatives were farmers there over the Missouri River in Nebraska.
Well, very good. So you got a local connection here, and apparently enough to remember it. So the Leamers of South Sioux.
Right.
All right. So anyway, your book set a long ways from South Sioux City and from the Midwest, but this is a story of glitz and glamour, and Capote's world's different from any world that any of us in the Midwest have probably ever known.
Right.
So tell me about
the world that's gone. These women, these elegant, beautiful, stunning women who are obsessed with dress and decor and creating this incredible image of themselves wherever they walk, that's gone from this world. There's just one generation and a few women like this, and it's gone.
Was it a post-war thing? What made it so unique to that particular era?
Yeah, I mean, in the post-war, the European dress designers became important, and dress became important. And I'm afraid I've got to bring this back to Iowa again, because in 1962, I worked for the What's Your Iowa Patriot Chronicle for 3 months. And the young men in high school wore jeans and T-shirts, and the young women, they went to JCPenney's in nearby towns and got these clothes that were knockoffs of the clothes that the Swans wore. And these young men, they wanted to become farmers like their fathers, and these young women, they wanted a different life. They were like Truman Capote's Breakfast at Tiffany's. They wanted a different life, like Holly-Golightly. So these glamour, it was an isolated world, far from Iowa, far from the rest of America, but women all across America looked at these women, identified, and many of them identified with them.
Just the women in the book, were they all aware of each other before they're linked to Capote, or was that what drew them all together into the same essential swan group?
Oh, yeah, they were in this exalted world. Forget the 1%. This is the 0.1%. And sure, they knew each other.
What was was Capote attracted to them? I mean, he was obviously a homosexual man, so he wasn't attracted to them on a sexual level, but what was Capote's draw to these particular women?
He found them interesting. He'd go to some fancy dinner party, and after people had dinner, the men would walk off into the library and smoke cigars and talk about sports and sex and politics. The women would go off there talk about other things. He went with the women. He thought their conversations were more interesting. And frankly, a lot of heterosexual men, then and even now, maybe they wanted to have sex with women, but they weren't terribly interested in them. They didn't listen to them. And Truman listened to them.
Where was Truman at when he started developing the Swan Group? Where was he at in his life professionally? Were we talking in Cold Blood, post Breakfast at Tiffany's?
Oh no, it was in the 50s. He in the mid 50s. Babe Paley, who was married to William F. Paley, the head of founder of CBS, he flew on a plane with them to Jamaica, and Paley thought, they said Truman was coming. He thought it was former President Truman, but it was Truman, and that's when Truman became, Babe Paley became his closest friend, and through her he began to meet the other women, and whichever one he was with was his most intimate friend at that moment, but he had this kind of nasty side to him. When he wasn't with them, he would say nasty things about them to the others.
Is there a modern-day celebrity like a Truman Capote that anybody can put into context? Because when you read about him, I mean, it's one thing to read about how he was viewed, but it's another thing to have lived at the time and experienced it. So how do you actually see what he was truly like at the time as a man?
No, there's never been anybody like him, and won't be again. I mean, that television shows and that kind of strange little voice of his. He was just so funny, and people thought he was nothing but gossip, but he was a brilliant writer. He was one of the great writers of our time.
So he's actually writing at the time, and he's taking notes. He's got diaries. What did you find as far as when you did your research to get an insight into Truman's life?
Well, Gerald Clark wrote a wonderful biography. It's one of the best literary biographies ever written, and that certainly was incredibly helpful to me. And then I did research on my own.
Truman Capote had these women around him, and what was the thought that they could... People talk to writers. It seems like I would think that they would want to clam up, but Truman got these people to divulge secrets and things like that. What was the thought that they could trust him? Why did these swans trust him?
Yeah, it was weird because you couldn't trust him at all. I mean, in 1962, he met Lee Roosevelt, Jackie Kennedy's sister, in this restaurant in New York, and she was so jealous of Jackie, she just was consumed with jealousy, and during the luncheon, talked about this. You know, so why would she do this to him, of all people, tell him the secret? Soon he left the dinner, he was telling his friends of what she had told him.
The New York City era that you describe at the time, it made me think of the TV show Mad Men, but as I read about it, it's a New York that no longer exists. But what was it about New York at the time that made it stand out and that we haven't been able to create that type of aura anyplace else again, or no other community has? I mean, there's plenty of rich communities in this country.
Well, the incredible diversity and the freedom and the energy of New York, there's never been anything like it. Not that anymore, in a way. It's such a dangerous place in certain ways and doesn't have that. But those are the great years in New York, and Truman was an essential part of it.
Truman was always looking to publish his book, Answered Prayers, and I thought it was interesting where that particular title came from. Where did it come from?
St. Teresa of Avila said, there's more unhappiness over answered prayers than unanswered prayers. And that's basically was going to be the theme of the novel, that, you know, look, it's a cliche that money doesn't buy you happiness, but that doesn't mean it's not true. And that's the sad story of so many of these people in this book. I mean, look, I've been writing for half a century, and what have I learned more than anything else? Don't be envious of anybody else. Don't look at somebody else and say, gee, if I only got there, if I could only own that house or go to that party, I would be happy. It's just not true.
When you looked at these women, is there one overriding source of their sadness? Because they're all damaged in some way, but did you notice one theme that kind of permeated all of them?
Well, the one thing is they sought happiness outside themselves. They thought by marrying a rich man, they would find fulfillment. And Holly Golightly in Breakfast at Tiffany's is, in some senses, the first swan. At the end of that novella, what does she do? She leaves. She's in trouble because she's involved with this businessman who's a criminal, and she has to leave the country. And what does she want when she leaves? Does she want a phase? She's going to Rio. Does she want a phrase book of Portuguese phrases or words? No. She wants a list of the 100 richest men in Rio, in Brazil, because she's looking for a rich man. And that's what all these women did. That's what they thought. And thank goodness that's gone from our world anymore.
Did these women influence Capote in any way other than the obvious one that he used them for essentially source material and ego building? Was there anything else that Capote took from them?
Well, he became such a celebrity with In Cold Blood, his masterpiece, and that he had a hard time finding time to write, and he was with these women, living in their yachts, he was in their great estates, he was, you know, having lunch with them on dinners all the time, and it drew him away from his writing. It just drew him away, and celebrity drew him away from his writing.
Why did he keep pursuing this particular project? Because it seems like somebody that had written Breakfast at Tiffany's, In Cold Blood, would know a good project when it comes around. I'm sure that you know a good book idea when it comes around, and you get into it, and you realize this is going to be good or this isn't, and you either scrap it or keep going. So why did Capote keep going with this project?
Well, it was a good idea. Look what I've done. I'm not Truman Capote, but I used this as a nonfiction, wrote a book that so far has gotten some of the best reviews of my life. It is a fascinating story. If he had done it, he would have had his masterpiece.
The picture that is on the cover of the book, it shows a particular sadness. Can you describe it? Because, I mean, obviously this is an audio medium, but can you describe it? Because it shows a particular sadness there.
Well, this is incredible. incredibly beautiful picture of Babe Taylor, and you're right. You see the sadness, and she's got her hand on her chin, and you look and you see how beautiful, and you see the sadness. So what was her sadness? When she was 17 years old, she was in an automobile accident. She had to have plastic surgery. She lost her teeth. She had false teeth. With Paley, her husband, she would get up in the morning. They slept in different bedrooms. She would get up in the morning. She put in her teeth. She put her makeup on even before she let her husband see her. That was her life. She lived her entire life in makeup, her entire life in illusion.
As I read this book and I read those particular aspects of Babe Paley's life, I thought of June Cleaver, because the old cliche is, who does housework? Who wears a dress every day? Who wears a pearl necklace every day? It's kind of a June Cleaver aspect to this without the housework involved, but that does seem like that
right.
particular show captured that thought, right?
Right. But this woman didn't lift her finger to do anything, okay? I mean, housework, these women had no idea how to cook. They were disdainful to a cook, and toward the children. They were almost out distance from the children. Somebody else took care of the children. They were brought in at the dinner parties to say a few words to the guests, and off they were.
When everything came out about when Capote started publishing some chapters of this book, and you know, just to prove that he had actually been working on it, what was the reaction among the elite who were not part of the Swans when they read this stuff?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the Swans. He did this in November 1975 in Esquire, and it was devastating. Devastating stories of many of these women that were his friends, and they wanted nothing more to do with him. And you know, that social world, they can turn on you in a second. And so the whole social world turned on him, and Truman started doing drugs and drinking.
Was this sort of idea with the Swans kind of an addiction that got out of control for Truman in the same way as drugs and drinking would?
Well, these women, look, he came from a little poor family in Monroeville, Alabama. He comes to the big city, becomes this big celebrity, and he was an interloper. He didn't belong in this world. It wasn't his world, but he wanted to make it his, but it could never be. And when they'd had enough of him, he was gone.
Did he ever recapture any of this aspect with other relationships that he had after the Swans were gone?
No, it was just going to... The peculiar thing about him is, as a gay man, he liked heterosexual men. Okay, he liked heterosexual men that he wanted to convert to his desires. And his first long-time lover was in Oklahoma, and was married to a woman who was one of the stars. Then he had three or four other lovers. They all were married men.
Is Truman Capote for you as a historian tough to understand?
Well, I guess in a way, but I guess I hope, you know, I hope I understand him. I understood, and I saw, I'm not gay, but I admire him standing up gay at a time when, look, I had a friend who was an officer in the Navy in World War II. His job was to find gays and put them in prison. So that Truman was out there as a gay man when it was illegal, when you could be beaten up, okay, but he was out there. He wasn't political, but his very life was a political act.
Well, the book just fascinated the heck out of me. It's a story I knew nothing about, and now I know a lot about it, and I feel like I got a real insight into a particular era of time. The book is Capote's Women, A True Story of Love, Betrayal, and a Swan Song for an Era by Lawrence Leamer. The book's available everywhere. Lawrence Leamer of What Cheer Iowa fame, right off I-80 in between I-29 and I-35 there, almost on the way to Des Moines from here. So, Lawrence, just a fantastic book you've put together, and I thank you for joining me to talk about it.
Hey, thanks, Brian. See you in Iowa.
Sounds good. See you in Iowa. This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio. I'm Brian Vakulskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com, and subscribe to our iTunes podcasts. Thanks to music historian Molly Jolly and segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.